Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. My name is John Summers Flanagan, and we are here to fill you up with some more practically perfect parenting knowledge.
I'm Sarah Polinchek, the co-host of today's show. What's it called, John?
Oh, the title of today's show is Let's Do the Sex Talk Again.
We haven't done it yet. Why are you saying again?
Well, two reasons. One is I thought it was a great play off of the Let's Do the Time Warp Again, which I know some people might not recognize, but that's from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm. And also because we need to have the sex talk again and again and again with our children. It's just not one talk.
I totally agree.
All right. You're with me now.
I am.
Okay. So this show is sponsored, as usual, by the Charles Engelhardt Foundation and the National Parenting Education Network. Thank you to them. And thank you to anyone else out there who would like to become a sponsor of the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. So, this show is part of a big talk series. In other words, we want to talk about some things that are big talks, big conversations that people should have, parents should have, caretakers should have with their children. Mm-hmm. And the first one is today, and it's about talking about sex, because it is a big topic, and it's one that oftentimes parents, boy, they avoid it, and we need to talk about why it's important to have that talk and how to have that kind of talk. So one of the things I thought was, you know, you could avoid having that talk with your kid, and I think a lot of parents do. My parents never had that talk with me.
I'm still waiting for mine, too. And hey, if my parents are listening, I don't want to have it now. I'm done.
Oh, I'll call your mom. Yeah. So I remember, gosh, years ago, The Onion had this funny article, and it was about how the parents didn't talk with their kid about sex, and so the kid found some, like, cousin on the street, maybe named Fergus, who was about 12 years old and considered himself the local expert about all things sexual, and maybe had some pictures and videos and stuff online that, you know, he showed the son or the daughter. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't talk about it, you're leaving it to Fergus, the 12-year-old on the street, who's probably the last person you want to talk to your kid about sex.
So right. What I would say about that, John, is we probably all had a Fergus in our lives,
yes,
right? Because generationally, our parents just didn't have these kinds of conversations as much as we're encouraging parents to do so today.
Right.
And now Fergus really exists in the computer and
ooh,
on the phones.
You're right.
Right? I would almost rather have Fergus than the access that they have to all the stuff that, right?
You're making a good point, Sarah.
I know.
It's a really good point. I would just say that don't leave it to what they find on their phones, and don't leave it to Fergus or, you know, the porn that they can find on the internet. You got to have the conversation, too, because you are a better person to have that conversation. Don't just leave it to the other sources of information.
Definitely. We need to be the kind of parent that's an askable parent.
What's an askable parent?
Well, just like it sounds, really. I mean, we all can probably go back. I know I can go in my Rolodex of parents and think who was not an askable parent. And I think many of the ones when I was growing up were not askable. You just got that sense that, oh, if I had a big question, I'm not going to that person. We want to be able to present ourselves from day one as the kind of parent that our kids, when they need us, or they have a question, they have something important they need to learn in their own home, they can find out, and we're that trustworthy, safe source for them, the askable parent.
Yeah. I had a mom who was the askable parent in the neighborhood.
Mm.
And so all the kids in the neighborhood would come drop in on my mom and talk with her about all kinds of wild things.
Yeah.
I don't even know what they were because I wasn't home, but I know she was a very askable parent.
Well,
not for me, but for the other kids in the neighborhood.
Sometimes when it's more removed and
it's easier.
I'm you're reminding me that I think I sort of have this title. I must, because a few years ago, our neighbors sent their kid over to our house for me to have the talk with him, and he wouldn't necessarily sit down at the table and have the talk, so he hid behind a wall, and we kind of constructed this conversation where I talked to my kids about sex, and then he was eavesdropping from behind the wall. It was awesome.
Oh, that is great.
I know.
So anyway, we have a few steps, and I don't even know if I'd call them steps, but really points for parents to remember, caretakers to remember, grandparents to remember, whoever is having this conversation to remember about how to get ready for and have the sex talk again.
Yeah, this is big, so it's important to get ready. And one of the first things we would recommend is do some advanced personal reflection. Mm-hmm. So I think taking the time to think about, how did we acquire the knowledge that we needed? Did we get the knowledge that we needed? Mm-hmm. What kind of information do we wish we had had? Who do we wish would have been supplying that information? You know, I mean, I think it's just important to go back in time and figure those things out about ourselves, and that's going to make us more intentional and clear when we're filling those gaps in for our kids.
Nice. Self-reflection helps with intentionality. Educate yourself. And, I mean, I would like to think that I already know everything that there is to know about sex.
I would hope you know a lot
but,
at this point.
But I don't, I mean, I find, you know, I'll even see things on the cover of Cosmo magazine in the grocery line that I think, oh, I didn't know that.
Wowza.
And, it, you know, it's happening all the time. Some of the books out there now on sex and sexuality are pretty, I'd say, amazing, overwhelming, and sometimes frightening. They're very explicit, much more explicit than I experienced in my generation. Now, I don't want to get into whether that's good or bad, but it is information, and information that's out there.
Definitely. And I would say we need to practice a little bit. If we didn't grow up comfortable with this topic, I think it's important to go into it being a little desensitized. So our kids, we might have to fake it a little bit, so that our kids are feeling like we truly are askable. And if we are conveying a bunch of anxiety and nervousness, that's going to diminish their likelihood of wanting to come to us, right?
We need to look comfortable.
Yeah. One of the things, this is going to sound really weird. I'm going to say some big words here. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. So I used to work as a therapist working with foster parents.
Yeah.
So as you can imagine, foster parents need to be able to talk about sex with their foster children because foster kids often have adverse sexual experiences in their past. And one of the things that we used to do, we met weekly, and it was partially to be funny, but we would do a little chant and say, vagina, 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 penis, penis, penis. How you doing? Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard those words before.
Okay, good, 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 good. So we used to do that and we would laugh, but partially it was just really because a lot of these parents had literally never said the words. And that was kind of it was a joke that it was the criteria to get past, you know, this stage and become a real foster parent.
Yeah, you couldn't graduate and become a foster parent.
Right.
Unless you were able to say penis and vagina.
Yeah, exactly. That was one standard that I had.
Yeah. So really what you're saying is use accurate language, and it might take some practice to get comfortable with some accurate language.
Yeah. So let me tell you why. Yeah. I have a big reason why it's important to use accurate language.
Okay.
Because we do not make up funny little names for our elbows or our noses or our ears, right?
So not when that
we're
I know of.
Teaching our 2 and 3-year-olds what the body parts are, and everybody does that, we call everything else by the correct anatomical terminology.
Right.
And if we make up funny little names for our penises and our vaginas, what kind of message does that send? It sends, oh my gosh, you can't even say the right words to describe these body parts. How are we supposed to have a conversation about them?
Yeah.
It sends a little signal, I think, that there's something shameful.
Yeah.
You know, you can't quite go there.
Right. Yeah. It's sort of a shameful thing, but also maybe it brings too much attention to it, right? It makes it sort of this special body part. And, you know, they are special body parts.
Yeah.
But it just puts more, I think, conflict, confusion, potential for, whoa, we call this a funny name. I don't even know the funny names, so I'm not going to try to say any.
Oh, one of my favorites from one of the
classes, okay.
I have to say one, is I had a woman in one of the classes I taught a few years ago who their whole family for generations had called the penis a horn, and she just refused. They all call it a horn, and she refused to
call it a penis.
Yeah. And it made me laugh.
I am not going to tell you what I've heard it called, just because I think this show is rated R.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
I would say another point is get ready to have the talk and get ready to have it again and get ready to have it again, because it will come up over and over. Now, obviously, this is sort of silly, but make sure you talk about other things too.
Besides sex?
Yes. I mean, you want to be just generally talkative and interested in the world. You know, one of the basic rules about raising intelligent children is the more words they hear from you directly and not on screens is that the higher the vocabulary that they have.
Okay.
So talk about all kinds of things, including sex, but just weave it in and out, you know?
Right. So it's like a nonchalant thing.
It's just part of life.
We talk about groceries. We talk about our pets. We talk about sex. It's just all in there. No big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. And you can weave it into talking about animals a lot because, you know, there is the classic birds and the bees thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Animals have sex.
They do. They reproduce.
Okay. So something.
And you learned that here.
Something else that I think is really important is to introduce just the idea that healthiest sex also has a component of feeling and caring about it, right?
Yeah.
I think that's important regardless of where you fall with your values because, I mean, really, research shows that mm-hmm. in relationships when there's feeling and caring that you're going to have the highest quality sex.
Right.
Yeah.
And some people are going to use the word love, too. Mm-hmm. I remember way back when my parents did not have the conversation with me ever, one night my two older sisters sat me down and they were, gosh, I was 12. Isn't that a little late?
Yeah.
Yeah. But my sisters were 14 and 17.
Oh, you got some juicy information.
Oh, they got this big book out. But, I mean, what do I remember? First of all, I remember being completely sick to my stomach about the whole thing because it felt so scary. But in retrospect, man, they just saved me in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason that they sat me down was because they realized I did not, there was some kind of joke about a rubber that was going around school, and I told my sisters it, and I said, I just don't get it. And I thought that the rubber was like a boot.
Oh, John, you've come so far.
Well, yeah, now I know it's not a boot. And I remember part of what they told me was sex is something that you have with somebody who you really love.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's sort of sappy, you know, in some ways. But it's also, I hope, true because you know, I think one of the things that helps us in sexual relationships and to have healthy ones is to realize that it's with someone you care about so much, you care about how they feel, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you care that much about how they feel, you know, all those other things, maybe consent and issues like that, it becomes something that you do together because you care about each other and not some act that is just for gratification.
Right. When the caring is present, everyone is so much safer in so many ways with that mutual respect piece.
Yeah. I also think to myself about having sex talks be developmentally and kind of contextually sensitive because, you know, you want to wait till the right time. Obviously, you want some privacy and you want to be in a good mood and be respectful of your child and the questions. But sometimes your child doesn't need much, especially younger kids. You know, they might say something they heard at school, you know. I heard somebody use the F word and they said it has to do with sex, right? You know, if it's a third grader, you might not have to talk much about that at all. It might be a 1 minute conversation and they'll have enough.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think the rule I've always gone by and what I used to teach parents was that give your kids just enough that they're ready for, and you'll know if they're ready for more because they'll ask more questions.
Yeah.
Right? So at age three, if they're wanting to know, I mean, you can just explain very minimally. And if they ask more questions, go with it. It's scaffolding, right? You just add a little bit more information, and they'll let you know when it's too much. And if you've done it in an open way, that's the most important thing, in a way that communicates that this topic is okay, they'll come back to you a few months later and ask another question.
Yep.
And if they don't, you go to them.
And I'm going
to
add a point now that maybe I was thinking of adding later, but that is make it interactive, right? It's not a monologue. And so check in with your kid. You know, you might say, so what do you think about what I said? Because you never know what they're thinking.
I think that's such a good point. And especially, can you imagine if you delivered a monologue to a 14 or 15-year-old? You'd lose them.
You lose them
real
quick.
You would not be the askable parent anymore.
Right. And sometimes you want to not just ask them what they think about what you said, or just even ask them, tell me back what you heard, the main part of what I was saying, because you might get something much different than you intended to communicate. So it's a communication check.
That happens a lot in communication.
You think?
Checking in is a good thing.
It is.
Yeah.
Almost always.
I'm just going to touch a little more on safety because we want to talk about that with our young kids, you know, our toddlers, and teach them that there are places on your body that are not okay for other people to touch. And it's important to do that in a way, again, that doesn't make them feel like, ooh, is there something wrong with these body parts? No, it's that they're private. They're for you and special, maybe. Some people might use that word. But we do need to communicate that piece to them because we live in a world where safety in that regard is important, unfortunately. Right. And then as kids get older, clearly the safety needs change to some degree. So with older kids, you know what I'm going to say is really scary, which is that the average age that kids watch porn, boys, do you know?
No, I don't want to.
It's depressing.
12?
11.
11.
Okay.
I was close.
I know. So there's more safety issues there. We could probably do a whole nother show on how do we deal with that because we can't get it out of our homes. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
With the college students that I used to teach intimate relationships to, I had everyone hold up their cell phones, and guess what? They all had on their cell phones.
I don't know. Links to porn?
No. They have those cases, those safety cases on their cell phones, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm getting at here? You're going
to
put a case on your phone, clearly you're going to put a condom on your penis, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So that was a good message. That
seems just pretty clear, straightforward.
Yeah.
What a good rationale.
Yeah. So we want to be able to have these kind of conversations with our kids, regardless of our values.
Speaking of values, I want to talk a little bit about that. I think it's possible to teach values, and I know some parents have strong and passionate feelings about abstinence, for example. I think it's possible to teach values and to do it in a positive way. And I think the best ways are by being good role models, having these kinds of conversations. And there's an old approach called choice theory. And what it says is that you shouldn't try to control other people's behaviors, but instead provide them with information and tell them what you want. And I think that's a good model for talking about sex. We want to provide information. All parents should provide information on safety and safe sex. Even parents who are more traditional or conservative probably want, if their child slips up and is not abstinent, they probably want it to be safe sex instead of unsafe sex.
Right. No one wants to be a grandparent too early.
Right. And no one wants their child to have a sexually transmitted disease, right?
And then there's also just the emotional safety. I mean, kids can really emotionally get hurt when they haven't been able to talk about some of these things, and they get involved and find themselves in situations too soon before their emotions have caught up to the rest of their body, and that's a big deal.
Yeah. And so the one thing I would say for parents who are a little more conservative and listening is I wouldn't sort of make your relationship with your child dependent on their abstinence. You know, you can let them know strongly what you would prefer and what you want and what you hope for and why you hope for it. I think those are all fine. But if your child happens to have sexual relations in a way that doesn't match your values, I wouldn't want that to sort of rupture the relationship between the parent and the child. I think most parents wouldn't want that either. Certainly most children wouldn't want that. And so I would tend to value the relationship with the child at a higher level than specific compliance with the parent's sexual values. Not that the sexual values aren't important and not that they shouldn't be communicated. All those are good, but I just hate to see kids cut off because they've engaged in something that, you know, in some ways our culture emphasizes and advocates way too much of.
So I think our point is to just keep talking,
keep
the lines
talking.
Open, right?
Yeah.
That's going to keep our kids safest and healthiest in the long run.
Right, right. No matter what kind of parent you are.
Right. So another thought is that we're surrounded. I mean, we can't get away from this topic, even if we did want to, which I'm not saying we do. But we are surrounded, you know, with the media. It's in politics now. I mean, it's everywhere, this topic. And it comes in so many different forms. And rather than just feeling like, oh, we got to throw our hands up and say, whatever, it's just out there, that we can use what we're hearing about as opportunities for learning. So even when we hear something that's absolutely so opposed to what our values are, or what we think, we hear that in the media or we hear it in politics, that's just something that we can now sit down and go, ah, did you hear about this? You probably heard about this at school. I want you to know that you're probably hearing lots of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not what our family thinks is okay.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, unfortunately, some of our politicians, and it seems to be unrelated to their party affiliation, mm-hmm. but politicians will sometimes engage in behaviors and say things that we would not really accept out of our 10-year-old.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have another show.
We might have a show on that.
We might, yeah.
Looking to the future.
Yeah.
All right, is it time for the money tip?
I think so. So I'm going to repeat one that I had said a little bit earlier, which is to use that anatomically correct body part, okay? The word, mm-hmm. the correct words.
I think I know what you
use
meant.
Use the body part. No, use the correct words for the body part.
Okay.
There we go. Okay. Again, because otherwise we're communicating a message that it might be shameful. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to say there might be some parents who are saying, well, we've called it a horn and our kids are 14 and 15, mm-hmm. and so we'll just keep calling it a horn. But mm-hmm. actually, we talk so much about making mistakes on this show and that that's okay. And so even if you have older kids and you've always been calling it a horn, you mm-hmm. can go back to them and say, hey, you know what? I just learned something. I realized we should be referring to these parts as a penis or a vagina instead of what we've been kind of calling them in our family. And that might have led you to think that we can't have open conversations and that there's something too uncomfortable to even say the words. And I want you to know that I've learned something new. And I'm an approachable, askable parent now.
Yeah. And I'm a parent that's open to new learning.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing to model for your children.
Yeah, right?
Nice.
So it's, I don't think you're ever too old.
Yeah.
Well, except I am. I don't want my parents to come to me now again. I'm too old.
Okay. It's good to know your limits.
Yeah.
So I have a money tip or two.
Okay.
The first one is just be brave.
Yeah.
Be brave. This is not easy. It's not comfortable. Even if you practice, it will not be comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I just say, you know, be brave. In some ways, also, you know, if I was being less empathic, I would say, get over it. I mean, get over your sexual baggage, you know, and you might have some,
mm-hmm.
and most of us do,
mm-hmm.
but try to put that to the side. That is, the conversation is about your kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about you. Now, there may be some of your experiences you can use to inform yourself about how to talk with your children and what to say, but I'd say, be brave, try to put your own sexual baggage and issues aside. And from there, you know, work on being a good, askable educator who checks in and interacts with your child on this as well as many, many other important issues in life.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And
All
I have
right.
one more. Can
okay.
I just do one more
you,
real quick?
You always do that.
You kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but
okay.
I want to suggest that parents not have the big talk.
Yeah.
Okay? So don't plan to come to your kid at age 12 or 14 or whatever it may be and say, okay, this is the day we're going to sit down and teach them what sex is.
Yeah.
I think it's so much more comfortable for everybody if you just start talking about it from day one. And it's just always a part of the conversation, like we've mentioned. So try to avoid the big talk.
Yeah.
Again, if your kids are old and you're feeling like, oh, it's too late, you can always go back and go, ah, dang,
yeah.
I messed up on something. Give me a chance here.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much power in being able to apologize and show your kids that you're someone who can make a mistake and then come back and repair, right?
I've heard a variety of stories from adult males, and often it involved a parent tossing a book of some sort into the
Just
kid's
leaving it. Yeah.
bedroom. Yeah. And, you know, this is part of what Alfred Adler would say, you know, we need courage to face difficult life tasks. And this is a life task if you choose to have children. And so if you avoid this one, you avoid it at your own risk and you avoid it. And you're probably going to then have your child learn mostly instead of sex ed from you, porn ed from the Internet.
Ugh.
They might learn that anyway, but you might as well have some supplementary information.
Yeah. Okay, so we have some resources.
We do.
Okay, this is a kind of a basic guide. It's called What's Happening to Me, A Guide to Puberty by Peter Mayle.
Peter Mayle. That's
mm-hmm.
an interesting name
it
to
is.
Go with that.
Yeah.
M-A-Y-L-E. So, yeah, that is an interesting book. I remember it being out when I was, gosh, maybe it was 20 years ago. So it's been around for a while. These next two are a little more modern. The first one might be good for people who consider themselves a little more traditional or conservative parents. It's called How to Talk to Your Child About Sex. It's Best to Start Early, but it's never too late.
I just said that.
You just did. You somehow psychically knew it was coming, or you're just as wise as these two people.
I must be.
Yeah, it's Linda and Richard Iyer wrote this one. Now, this next one, the third of our resources, is titled It's Not the Stork, a book about girls, boys, babies, bodies, families, and friends by Roby Harris. Now, that's maybe a little more for liberal parents. I really suggest that if you're thinking about a resource that you want to use, that you go online and you can look on Amazon or other major booksellers, and you can look at the ratings and the reviews that other parents have given. Mm-hmm. Some parents rated this last resource, the It's Not the Stork resource, as too explicit for their comfort. And I don't want to advocate one kind of parenting over the other. I want to say, you know, no matter what kind of parenting you're doing, this conversation over and over is an important one.
Definitely.
All right.
All right. So I think we should encourage all the parents who are listening to drop the words penis and vagina into their conversation somehow today.
Okay.
Casually, somehow.
Maybe they should first just start with each other, just like you used to do. They could just chant it.
Yes. Yeah. Wouldn't that be great if kids come home from school and you're chanting the words?
Might be great.
All right.
Okay. Well, we are done for today, and we'd like to thank you guys for listening to us talk about sex, or having the sex talk again. Mm-hmm. And we probably will have it again on this show, and we hope that we wish you guys the best in just navigating this challenging situation mm-hmm. in your lives and in your families.
Mm-hmm. Take some deep breaths and talk about it.
So thanks for listening, and thanks to the Charles Englehart Foundation, and remember, NPEN, National Parenting Education Network, and all the great resources they have and that other organizations have about this topic.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Sarah.
The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.